This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. One round of fixtures down, another 45 to go. On the opening weekend in Sky Bet League 2, new boys Harrogate Town got off to the best possible start, battering Southend United on their trip to the seaside. Two of the three relegated clubs in Sky Bet League One, Charlton Athletic and Hull City, both recorded away wins. And of the six new managers in the Sky Bet Championship, all but one got off to a winning start. We might not have the crowds, but football is back. And we'll be previewing what lies in store this weekend on the official EFL podcast. The 1st of August saw Oldham Athletic appoint a new first team coach who has been rapidly assembling a new squad ready for a condensed and packed Sky Bet League 2 season. It's his latest stopping point in a football career that saw him leave his native Australia for Leeds United at the age of 15, play for Liverpool in 2005's epic Champions League final and represent his country at two World Cups. Boundary Park is Harry Kewell's third managerial appointment after Crawley Town and Notts County. And you just know, Harry, that I'm going to say, boy oh boy, you don't take the easy route when it comes to your coaching career, do you?
Well, I definitely take the exciting ones. Let's just put it down. Let's put it that way. And as much as I do love the Premier League, I think it's a fantastic league. It's fast and furious. But to be honest with you, League One, League Two, I think it's the real football of England. It's so exciting. There's so many things you learn day in, day out about people. You never quite nail it, so you've always got to be on your toes, because at this level you could be 2-0 up in about 85 minutes and then you could come off losing 3-2. So it's always something that you've always got to be on your toes. You know, there's no game really that is dead and buried until the actual final whistle is gone. And that's why I like it. I enjoy it, and I think there's a lot of room for improvement as well.
Do you take quite a scholarly approach to it then? Have you kind of immersed yourself in the lower leagues the last few years, really going into every little nook and cranny and learning about players and styles and rival managers and all the rest of it? Do you have to do that to get amongst it?
I think so. It's somewhere where you're learning your trade, and it's not about getting all the pitches or the balls or the staff. I think it's about understanding how a club actually works. And especially at the level that I'm in at, you're kind of going on the front line and you're kind of looking at, on every angle, what can you do? So you're part of the transfer market, you're part of the medical setup, you're part of the fans, you're part of the stadium, the ground, everything. I like to immerse myself involved with everything, so I know as a coach what's happening at my club. And I think it's a great learning curve for me if I do get that opportunity, for one, to bring Oldham up to that next level or to move up as well.
So this is part of the master plan then, from your point of view?
It definitely is a part of a plan. You know, whether it's the master plan, it's going to take time. But like I said, the one thing I have is time. I love this job. I love going out there. I love training. I love coming up with different ideas. Trying not to make it too difficult for players to understand. So for me, it's just, like I said, I love it. I love going out here because you just really don't know what you're going to get. Even in training days, you just don't know what quality you're going to get.
So that's a very humble attitude to take, isn't it? Because I think there'd be other people in the game who've probably had it less than you achieved in your playing career who might have said, nah, not for me, I'm not getting my hands dirty at that level. So what has driven you to that point is, I guess, my question.
I think that the big thing is you can see a lot of differences at this level, whereas at the top level you can work and you're really working for them 1 or 2%. Not even the 2%, it's the 1% of what you can get. And it's very hard to kind of nail it down. Whereas at this level here, you can kind of change the whole culture, the way that players see the game, adapt to the game. And I think the percentages are a lot higher. I felt even at my last few clubs that I saw a difference from the first time I went in there to when I had left, that the players had risen either 10 to 15% in only in their own standard. So that's what I like.
I get it. So what you're basically saying is, because I've been lucky enough to watch you in a training session when you were at Notts County, you're very immersive, you're in the thick of it, your own energy pours out, but you're saying you get those big gains in players. You can see those differences straight away by working with them at that kind of level. That's part of the buzz for you.
Oh, it's definitely a buzz. But again, a lot of these players, I kind of feel for, because everyone kind of thinks, oh, well, they're League Two, they're no good, they're past it, or they've never made it. I mean, a lot of these players have been at top academies, may have had a misunderstanding through their career that have put them down at different levels, may have had injuries to get back. But every player that I have come across in my three clubs, bar one or two, they've all wanted to learn, and they've all loved playing the normal style of football again. And that's what's nice. They're here, they want to play. And I actually think you're actually seeing more teams as well trying to play the right way now than they were, say, let's say 20 years ago. So I even take my hat off to a lot of the managers now, because, again, the kind of pressure we put on our fullbacks or our centre-backs or our holding midfielders now to get the ball and turn out like the top teams do, it takes courage, because the top players are obviously used to it. But these players are starting to learn it. And when you do see players do your movements or they stick to your plan, it's like I said, it's such a buzz, a joy. I always said I could never ever get that feeling again of scoring. So when you score a goal, everyone always asks, what's the feeling like? And it's this, I don't know, it's like this inside, it's like euphoria, it's like everyone's watching you. It's an amazing feeling. And I thought, well, since I've stopped playing football now, you know, you don't get that buzz. But I always remember my first goal that Crawley scored for me, I had that feeling. And every time my team scores, I have that feeling. Even though I didn't score it or anything, but it's part of what we've worked on during the week. And like I said, it's even better than me actually scoring.
Wow. Do you use your own playing career at any point during coaching sessions, doing tactical preparation, stories, incidents of when something's worked for you, or do you tend to knock it down?
No, I don't tend to talk a lot about my career, because it's got really nothing to do with it. I will say one or two things in certain positions, especially for like wider players, how I would attack a defender, how my movement would be, what I try and look for. But even as a coach, I would still look at that as a striker or as a defending midfielder. I don't know. I was always lucky enough to be able to read the game of football from a very early age. I kind of saw things in games where even managers knew that if I kind of drifted from the left to the inside, I did it for a reason. I just didn't do it because I wasn't getting the ball. I knew I could understand it. And I think that's helped me as a coach be able to see things and kind of guide players as well into hopefully seeing what I'm seeing.
Now, paint us a picture. You walk into Boundary Park on the 1st of August. Not a lot of players on the books at that point, it would seem. What happened next, Harry?
We had 8 players. Which, you know what, there is two sides to this, because now I've worked with both, right? My first job I walked in with 24 players.
Okay.
And the owner was going, you know what, you've got to get rid of some. And I'm like, well, how can I get rid of any? Because I don't know them. You know, it's going to at least take me 2 to 3 weeks, the quickest, to say yes or no. So it takes time. And then I had players coming and going and all that kind of stuff. But you did have a squad. You know, you did have at least 20 players to at least play, you know, a game. Obviously, walking into Oldham, yeah, we had 8 players that was signed. It was interesting, but I have to say I was lucky, because I had my back four, right, which was perfect, and mm-hmm. I was very quick to move on a keeper, which worked. So in all fairness, it kind of helped me, because I could look at a lot of attacking players, but I was always working with my original back four, back five, I should say. So that kind of helped, and I could really focus in on exactly how I wanted to defend early on in the season, and then I can just drip feed the others when they came in.
And we're hearing, obviously, serious question. I mean, the whole sort of post-COVID or current COVID environment. I mean, what is the kind of emotional mood of the players that are available like? Because we are hearing that wages are being reduced. There's been a big adjustment going on. I mean, what are you finding when you're going out there and analysing your options for left wing or whatever position you're looking to strengthen?
I think the one thing you are finding is that players are loving coming back and training and just being out on the pitch again. And I think that's the important thing about the whole of COVID and all that, because we're still, you know, very raw to the system. You know, we're trying to put in a lot of protocols here so we don't drift too far away from it, because if you go straight back into normality, it's going to hit you. And if one player gets it, then it can filter throughout the team. It's like it's like the cold, you know. If one player gets it, everyone will get it. So for us, and trying to get players in hasn't really been that difficult, because I think a lot of players just want to get back out there and play. Don't get me wrong, you do come across the odd player that demands a lot. That's normal. But sometimes, you know, that player may be worth, you know, going that little bit further for. But I'd have to say that the players that I've brought in, when I sat down with them, they were all excited about the way that I wanted to play. Two, Oldham is a huge club. You know, it's one of the founding members of the Premier League. And it's kind of just been in a lot of pain over a lot of years. And I think a lot of these players want to kind of see Oldham back to where it should be. So I've been fortunate enough to attract some great players. Now we just got to get that fitness level to the next level and progress.
Does the short-term culture of, in particular, League Two shock you? That contracts you yourself have only signed a year, but, you know, a lot, there is such a churn of players in League Two every single summer.
It is, and that's where it's difficult sometimes to really nail down a squad, really nail down a system. You know, if you want to use a fancy word, a philosophy on football, styles, you know. But that's League Two, you know. It's not going to change. I think when you do get a squad together, you do stick at it, and you do create a great team harmony in that, I think that's when you start to see teams going up in levels. Like, for example, Luton, you know, from where they had been to putting together a strong squad and then be able to work up and then now sustain themselves into the Championship, I think that's fantastic. I mean, if you even go back to what Bournemouth did, I always think Bournemouth and what Eddie Howe did was fantastic. So, again, we've got to look at it as that, yes, we're a club. We want to bring young, exciting players in. Yes, we all want to sell them on to that next higher level, but we've got to also think about the club itself, and we've got to sometimes think we've got to keep them great players to progress the club as well.
Now, listen, when you took the job, you said it's going to take time. The one thing I think this club needs is stability. You will be aware that your predecessor was the club's longest-serving manager for 5 years and was there for 10 months. The stats also are you're the 14th manager since Lee Johnson departed in February 2015. How does that make you feel, Harry?
What's the Watford one to our one?
Oh, well, listen, I gave you a pretty tough question and you've just given me one back there, haven't you?
It really doesn't matter. I think it's a thing now for managers. If you don't perform, you move on, and I'm going to be no exception. If you're not getting the results, you know, unfortunately, that's the ruthlessness of this job, is that they will move you on and get someone else that can do the job. And it's not just at this level. It's not just at this club. It's at every club. From in the conference, you see it happening up to the top level. So as far as I'm aware, I know it's going to be a tough job. I know it's going to be exciting, but I know every game, you're only as good as your 3 points.
How are you so comfortable in your own skin?
Because I believe in what I do. I believe in my ideas, and I think that kind of flows out of me throughout the club when I sit down with people. I think the one thing that players will pick up on straight away is if they don't believe the head coach or the trainer or the manager in his ideas, if he goes in there and is half-hearted and not fully committed, players will see through that. And then that's when you start having, you know, separation in dressing rooms and all that, because players are not understanding or they're not believing in it. I believe in what I do. I love it. I think it's there's a formula. I think there's a way of working it. But the one thing I do ask for my players is to be confident and be brave, because that's the only way you can become a footballer, is to be confident and brave and to be on the ball. You can't run away from it. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to do anything in the game.
Harry, it's been really great to talk to you. Final question. Have you got a woolly vest? I mean, I don't know if you've heard about Boundary Park's reputation, but mate, middle of winter there. I mean, it's about as cold as it gets, isn't it?
Yeah, and I found out that it's the second highest stadium in the leagues, right? So when that wind does come across, it is going to be cold. But you know what? It doesn't matter if it's snowing, raining, I will still be sweating because I'll be pumped up.
Really lovely to talk to you. Good luck, Harry.
Thank you very much.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
So the ever-positive Harry Kuehl is determined to restore the fortunes of Oldham Athletic, and somebody else has already done their bit to put his team on the map. Here's a question for you. What links Coventry City to actors Michael Sheen and David Tennant? And come to think of it, Hollywood A-listers Samuel L. Jackson and Dame Judi Dench. Well, the answer is they all appeared in BBC TV's lockdown Zoom comedy stage. Sheen and Tennant played themselves, attempted to rehearse a COVID-cancelled play online, and Dench and Jackson made guest appearances. As for Cov's role, I'm going to let editor Dan Gage explain. Dan, it's time to confess. What did you do?
So we were asked if we wanted to thank anyone in the end of screen credits. And I started off just thanking sort of my mum and dad, who'd started to help me out at the start of lockdown with certain things. And then as we got through the episodes, I was like, well, this is quite a good period in the history for Coventry. We've never been sat at the top of a league on the verge of promotion, you know, for 60 years. So I started to sneak in a couple of Coventry players and the manager. And then when they were getting through and no one was coming back and questioning them, I got a bit bolder and put a few more in.
I absolutely love it. So you combined your job with your passion and you got away with it. I mean, did nobody bring it to your attention? Do you know, did the director Simon Evans not spot it? Did nobody bring it to your door at all?
I think there was just an element of trust that I clearly exploited.
Yes, you did.
But also the turnarounds were so quick. We didn't really have much of a chance to have those back and forth conversations once it had gone. It was just like, okay, these are the names, great, let's go with them.
I was watching it, and obviously it's been on a couple of times over the course of lockdown. I think it was originally put out, was it in June, and then got repeated in July, or even a little bit earlier. But I'm sitting there and the titles are rolling, and I saw the name Adi Vivish, and I thought, Adi Vivish is Mark Robbins' assistant. There can't be two Adi Vivishes in the country. It's too distinctive a name. And then I looked a bit, and might have been the same programme or the next page. I mean, there was Max Biamu, and I thought, what the heck is going on here? And then when I delved below the surface, I love stuff like that. So that's about the extent of the story. That's the peg for getting you on the official EFL podcast. I mean, there's no chance that Sheen or Tennant got to find out a bit more about Cov and are suddenly fans, or Dame Judi or Samuel L.
I would happily bore all of them with stories about Coventry City, but I think they're probably a little too busy for that.
Yeah. Come on then, Coventry support. How old are you? How long have you been supporting them? What's your greatest memory? How have you dealt with the last 10, 15 years, which have been rocky to say the least?
So I'm in my mid-30s. So my first game was actually a pre-season friendly just after we won the cup. David Speedy's debut in the late 80s. The first 20 years of being a Coventry fan, well, probably the first 30 years, it was just really tough. Like, we didn't have a good season ever. we would always be scrabbling around at the bottom of whichever league we were in. Once or twice we were mid-table championship, but yeah, it's hard. So you sort of learn to take different things from the game. So you're looking at the tactics and seeing the players develop and then go on to better things. But by a long way, the greatest memory is the 4-1 away win against Notts County in the playoff semi-final 2 years ago. But also just seeing how Mark Robbins has come in and turned the club around. Even the first time around, you could see that he knew how valuable it was to change the club's relationship with the fans and get them on side with the players. And you could see as soon as he came in, the change in the players in how they would communicate with the fans on Twitter and on social media was really evident. And he's continued that. He's been like the amount of managers that have come in and just crumbled under the weight of the club and the fan dissent is ridiculous. And they're good managers as well. But he's just understood exactly what's needed. And just to see the gradual turn and now the move in the right direction is really, really pleasing to see.
I mean, there is just something about fit, isn't there? Just the fit of a manager to a particular club. And I guess the biggest compliment we could pay Mark Robbins is he's managed to stay on side with the owners, but be completely embraced by the supporters who have been critical over the years.
Yeah, it's a really tricky path to try and walk that one. But he's sort of, I think he genuinely appreciates that the owners are doing their best in the situation. He understands that he can't control what goes on above him. And his focus is on creating a good team that play good football and trying where he can to please the fans. And he's doing a really good job with Adi Vivash as well, actually, it has to be said.
Yeah, well, I know you're about to start AD's fan club. There's no doubt about it, having given him that title billing. As far as your own lockdown goes, aside from your naughtiness, at least you knew, however the season finished, you were in for the right result, I guess, unless you restarted and blew the lead you had at the top and that magnificent form and momentum you were in before.
Yeah, that was the worry, that the season might be cancelled. It would have been a disaster, really. There would have been so many things that would have needed to have combined in order for us not to go up. And actually, we were announced as champions the week that Staged went out, so that was quite a fortuitous coincidence.
Result. Don't you just love it when the stars align, that serendipity all comes together and everything happens absolutely right for you. Now, what are your prospects this season, do you think, Dan? It's a hell of a stretch you've had already.
Yeah, massive step up. But we've signed some good players. Gustavo Hamer looks very good, very similar to Liam Walsh. I think looking at how we played against Bristol, after letting in a goal before we touched the ball, we were dominant for the next hour. So if we can turn that into 90 minutes, then we'll be fine. As long as, I think we're possibly very reliant on Matt Godden scoring goals. But if we can maybe bring Tyler Walker into that, then we'll be fine, I think.
My eyes are drawn on the fixture list to the 30th of January. And I don't know whether you know what that one is, but that is the day when you will go to what is your home ground, St Andrews, as the away team, which this kind of thing always intrigues me. For anybody that's forgotten, Cov are ground sharing with Birmingham City for the second successive season. That is going to be weird, isn't it? Going in the away dressing room rather than the home you're used to and all that stuff.
Well, it's as it should be. But yeah, it will be odd. But we did have a dress rehearsal for that last year in the FA Cup. So it was good fun, actually. It was good natured between the fans and we put in a good performance. So I think they're the sort of things that Mark Robbins takes the emotion out of and just focuses on the game. So I don't think it'll matter to the players, but for the fans, if we're back, it'll be good fun again.
Yeah, I'm just going to remind you of your naughty list. Mark Robbins, Adi Vivash, Matt Godden, Max Biamu, Dom Hyam, Liam Kelly. Were there any more that I didn't spot in there? I've got six on that list. Were there any more in there?
I think there were a few more, but let's not expose the full weight of my misdemeanours on here.
Are you planning to do something similar? What are you currently working on? Can you tell us, or is it top secret?
I'm not in work at the minute, so...
Okay.
There has been a bit of talk. Actually, I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that. But
yeah, I was going to say, I can just tell by your hesitancy that I've asked you a question that you wish you didn't. And I know how secret some of this stuff has to be. So I'm going to leave it at that. But whatever it is, I'm going to be looking out for your name on the credits. And then I'm immediately going to be looking at the thanks section and expecting the whole... In fact, I'll challenge you. I want you to get Keith Houchin's name in the next one, okay? Get the legends moving through the ranks as well. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure to talk to you as well.
Thanks for joining us. Dan. And I'll tell you what, if you have your own stories of going the extra mile to support your club and you've done things that maybe you shouldn't have done, then we'd like to hear from you. EFL@thepodcastworks.com. That's EFL@thepodcastworks.com. I'm not talking, obviously, about anything that involves breaking the law. But, you know, if you're a builder and you buried a Southampton shirt under the main stand at Fratton Park or wherever it is, do please let us know and we'll read some of them out on a future episode of the official EFL podcast.
This is the official EFL podcast.
So it is back to business across all three Sky Bet divisions, and who better to give his thoughts on the season's opening exchanges than a man who's had more transfers than Andros Townsend has had EFL loans. First, he was the voice of the EFL on the BBC, then Channel 5, and Paul Walker is now the main matchday commentator on Quest. Now, I'm not putting you on the spot with stats and things, but it suddenly struck me, you know, Paul, I mean, this is your 12th season doing this. Just how many goals you've seen, just how many managers have come and gone, the amount of play. I mean, do you ever look back and think of it in those kind of terms?
No, do you know what? I'm not one of these commentators that kind of tots up all the mileage, all the games, all the goals. I just kind of bumble my way through from one week to the next, going length and breadth of the country. And to be honest, I forget games. I forget most of the games that I do, unless they're particularly really good standout games. My memory's like a sieve. It ain't very good at all, which actually goes against the grain as being a commentator, because you need a good memory.
You do, mate. Just a sec, please. Scratching out next question. What one moment do you remember from your career?
No, I can do that.
Well, go on then, do it. If I said to you in those 11 seasons that you've completed so far, I am giving you one outstanding EFL moment, what would it be?
It would be, for me, Sheffield United 4, Nottingham Forest 3 in the playoffs, 2003, I think. They were 2-0 down at half-time. The Blades came back and won. Neil Warnock, obviously, was manager. Forrest thought it was theirs at half-time. I remember looking across at the BBC guys from Radio Nottingham, who were kind of jumping up and down and getting all excited about a trip to the playoff final. And at the end, just like the Nottingham Forest players, were on their knees wondering what on earth had hit them. But in terms of drama, that was an incredible, incredible night. Sheffield United went on to the playoff final, lost, as they usually do in playoff final.
Now, you see, what you've done is you've picked personal allegiance there, Paul, and I don't think there's any doubt.
I do not know what you're talking about, Glenn.
Because that was not the question that I asked of your entire career. It was your 11 years covering the EFL for various national TV outlets, and you've gone back to 2003.
When I was working in radio covering EFL.
Thank you very much. Oh, this is a dodge of the question. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Tell me something, one other question related to your own career. It must be lovely to follow the progress of players where maybe you pick one up in the lower leagues and he's caught your eye, and then they get a move to a championship and you're seeing him week in, week out. And then rather like somebody like Ollie Watkins, who's just got his move from Brentford onto Villa, they get the big, big move. That must be a lovely part of the job.
Definitely. And there's been countless examples of that, haven't there, down the years. And you get to know, doing this job, and you'll know this as well, you get to know these lads. And more often than not, lads, especially in the EFL, most of them are really down-to-earth, good lads who've worked really hard to where they've got to. And to see them then elevate themselves up to the top division is really pleasing, really satisfying. So, yeah, you're right. There's been a number, and you're probably going to ask me for examples now, so don't do that. I've just told you my memory's not very good. But there's been a number of young players who've kind of made their way from the bottom up, and I think that's brilliant to see. I really do.
Yeah, and sometimes they've suffered some fairly major road bumps as well along the way. Like, for example, they've been released by a big academy. They've had to regroup in the bottom divisions and they've gone again. So often these are stories of salvation and resilience and real dedication.
Yeah, definitely. You're absolutely right. And I think it's good. I think the Premier League now, more than they have in the past, are looking at Championship, League One players to kind of nurture for the future. You know, without harping on about Sheffield United too much, but there is a prime example. But they are shopping in that market, Clem. They can't compete with some of the top-end clubs in the Premier League. And Chris Wilder has a look around the Championship. Jadon Bogle, for example, had a fine season at Derby. Max Lowe being another one previous to that. Luke Freeman is given a chance. Callum Robinson he gave a chance to, is now at West Brom. So I think there's a lot of mileage for Premier League clubs to look further down the chain as opposed to looking within their own league, looking abroad. And there are some really good players in the EFL who deserve a shot.
And just while we're on the subject, I mean, I mentioned Ollie Watkins. I know you saw his debut for Villa in the Carabao Cup when they won at Burton. Actually, I just wanted to praise Exeter City in this because they sold him to Brentford for 1.8 in 2017. He's gone to Villa for 28 million. But Exeter City had the foresight to put a 15% sell-on clause in there, which means they've just netted themselves another 4 million from the deal. Now, we're in extraordinary times and clubs are being squeezed, but if they can afford just to take the add-on rather than take the 100 grand, 200 grand on the deal, the benefits in the long term, Paul, I mean, it's just a great way of doing things from Exeter's point of view.
Yeah, gold star for Julian Tagg, by the way, for getting that deal in. I think if you bear in mind he's moved to Brentford and then he's moved to Villa, they've made probably just shy of 6 million quid on Ollie Watkins. I mean, talk about fantastic business. And as you say, obviously we couldn't have foreseen the situation we found ourselves in, but where clubs are short on money and they've lost a lot of revenue. I mean, Exeter City are laughing in many respects. Having said that, I've read that they will get the money in instalments. It's not going to all come in one lump sum. But what it will do, of course, is ease the strain put on them by this COVID pandemic. Fans obviously will want it to go to Matty Taylor to strengthen the squad. I'm sure he hopes he'll see some of that dough as well. But if it means that Exeter can move forward and keep running as a business without dipping into even further reserves, which they've had to do up until now, then it's all for the better, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's take a whistle stop around the opening round of fixtures. And I mentioned in the opening of this week's official EFL podcast that five of the six new managers had won. But you were at the game that involved the one that didn't win. That's Carlos Corberan's Huddersfield against Norwich, who won by a goal to nil. And actually, probably of the three relegated clubs from the Premier League, we probably didn't give Norwich enough TLC last week, David Prutton and I. What were your impressions of them? Because obviously they've had a fairly major makeover.
They have. 11 new signings brought in the summer. It wasn't a remarkable performance. It was a hard-fought win. A player that stood out for me, he didn't play them all, of course, but I think three or four made their debuts. The player that really stood out was Oliver Skipp on loan from Tottenham. Just signed a new contract before moving to Norwich. He was excellent. Norwich looked comfortable. I will say this for Huddersfield. I thought they started very aggressively. 4-3-3 system, very similar to Leeds. You could definitely see some of the traits that Bielsa was using last season, obviously when Corberan was stood alongside him in the technical area. A little light in attack. They couldn't play Danny Ward. He was injured. They've lost Steve Mounier. Colin Grant were expecting to leave as well. So that's an area I'm sure they'll be looking to strengthen. But there were positives for Huddersfield. I thought organisation-wise, for the most part, looked good. So I think Corberan will take positives from the performance. And the one thing that I did notice, he's very animated in his technical area. And he also did the famous Bielsa crouch on occasions as well. Do you know when he gets really down low? He was doing that.
No.
It was incredible. Yeah, he was not for as long as Bielsa does it for. Obviously, Bielsa's got more stamina and more practice of doing it. But he actually did it.
Wow.
That was great.
Wow.
Yeah.
In League One, Charlton winning at Crewe.
Charlton. I mean, Lee Bowyer is doing a great job. And key to Charlton's success as well, I think, is keeping hold of some of their bigger name players. Macaulay Bonn attracting interest. The goalkeeper, Phillips, attracting interest. Alfie Doughty, who scored last weekend, is another one. So he'll be keen to keep that trio together.
And into League Two, well, obviously, Harrogate, again, I mentioned in the opening, with an amazing win at Southend. But I just want to talk to you about Bolton. I know they lost 1-0 at home to Forest Green, but a completely different starting lineup this season to the last game of last season. I mean, that is, obviously, this is a club that has seen so much change and had an extraordinary amount of hardship over the last few years to contend with. But Ian Everett, I mean, that is some bedding down process when you've got, or is it? What do you think? Or is it a lot easier to have a clean sheet of paper?
No, I think it's got to be. 18 new players. It's incredible. Yet to win, but you look at some of the players they have got at that level. Sarcevic, Doyle, who was amazing last season. I think once they get that first win, I know it's easy to say, but I think once they get that first win, they'll get into the groove. I'd be amazed if Bolton aren't up there challenging. And if you can get Bolton playing anywhere like Barrow did last season, then Bolton fans are in for a really good season. Early days, bumps in the road, they'll get there.
A defeat for Grimsby in their first league match of the season. But one of their players has been making the headlines. And I caught up with manager and indeed club director Ian Holloway to hear all about it. You threw a 15-year-old schoolboy into your EFL Trophy game against Harrogate Town. He scored within 7 minutes of coming off the bench. He's the club's all-time youngest ever goal scorer. You blooded him off the bench in your first league match of the season as well. Tell me more. What was it that made you go with him at such a tender age?
Well, I went and watched the under 21, and I managed to see him, and I watched him for 20 minutes. He was sub for them, and I thought I liked what I saw, and I thought I'd give him a chance. And boy, oh boy, did he take it. So, you know, at the end of the day, my job here is about getting our own players and bringing them through. And I've got a wonderful youth setup, absolutely wonderful youth setup. And they're telling me this is their best crop they've had for 15 and 16 year olds. So having watched one game, I thought, wow, didn't they do well? Particularly Louis. He ran at the right time. I'd never trained with him. Never seen him train. I only saw 20 minutes. He'd never met our lads because they had, with COVID and also with his age, he had trained separately. So he was off the bench, never knew half my team. So it's quite remarkable what he did. So I rewarded him on Saturday. And do you know what? When he came on Saturday, he improved us as well. So it's really, really exciting for his mum and his dad and for Grimsby because they want ones of their own.
I mean, listen, Paul, you can hear the warmth in Ian Holloway's voice there, can't you? But I just love the fact he's had the bottle to throw a 15-year-old in. But, you know, how do you manage that scenario when the kid has got to go back to school and get on with geography then, you know, 48 hours later? Amazing.
I struggle with my lad who's approaching 15 to prize him out of his bedroom off his games console. So the thought of him potentially playing professional football is just miles away from me. But who better to give him a footballing education than a man who's been there, seen it, done it, and a character like Ian Holloway? I mean, goodness me, the lad must be on cloud nine.
He's the youngest goal scorer in Grimsby's history with that goal in the EFL Trophy. I mean, listen, hats off to Ollie for having the bottle, as I say, for throwing him in. Let's look ahead to this weekend then, Paul. Anything catch your eye amongst the fixtures? I have a few myself, but anything catch your eye?
Championship Forest Cardiff, having missed out last season. Not been a good start for Forest at all, has it? And they were my tips to go up automatically. I just thought, despite the kind of failure of last season and missing out in the most incredible of circumstances, I just thought that Lamouchi would get it right. And you look at some of the players he's brought in. I thought Lyle Taylor and Lewis Graben as a partnership would be terrific. May well still be. It's early, but I think they'll come good. I do. I mean, they are my favourites to go up. Maybe not automatically. Maybe I'll have to revise my opinion. Maybe it's playoffs. So something has to give. Forest against Cardiff this weekend. Has to.
Luton Derby, Borough against Bournemouth, Norwich against Preston. Sunday game. I know you've got high expectations of Stoke City. You entertain Bristol City.
I have. Yeah, I saw enough from Michael O'Neill last season to suggest that he can really move this club forward. I think it's time now for Stoke to kind of wake from their slumbers, as it were. We know about the problems they've had. He's got a huge squad, still needs to move players out. He's, by his own admission, has said he's got far too many players. And you look at some of the senior pros he left out last weekend, James McLean, Benny Kofobe, not involved at all. But I do like some of the signings he's made. Stephen Fletcher, who we know can score goals at this level. Morgan Fox did really well in a struggling Sheffield Wednesday team last season. James Chester. The interesting one is John Obi Mikel. We know about his pedigree, but can he do it week in, week out? Can they keep him fit? What kind of John Obi Mikel are we going to see throughout this season? Could go one or two ways, that one, for me. But I think Stoke are a dark horse this year.
Into League One. Well, you go first. What have you picked out from there?
I'm going to go for Wimbledon against Plymouth for the very reason of playing their first league game at the Kyan Prince Foundation Stadium, because obviously Plough Lane isn't quite ready yet. So an interesting dynamic there for AFC Wimbledon. How will they cope playing at a totally different stadium?
Yeah, it is. And you know what? And I mean, I'm sure over the course of the season on the official EFL podcast, we will talk about this incredible sort of finishing point, if you like, of Wimbledon being restored to Plough Lane. And obviously COVID had just held up the construction. The club decided, rather than try and rush it and put themselves under extraordinary strain, to just, you know, take a beat and play a few games at QPR. But when that transformation is finished, it will go down once again as one of the greatest stories, surely, in the history of English football. It was the first time, the way they came through, went all the way to the top flight and then won the FA Cup as well. But to do it again from where they started, just an amazing story. Peterborough Fleetwood was the other one that had sort of caught my...
Yeah, Fleetwood. Fleetwood are going to be strong.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you look at the players they've got. They've got goals in them, they've got creativity, and they've got nous as well. Glenn Whelan, for example, bags and bags of experience. They've added Mark Duffy this summer. Chet Evans and Paddy Madden will always get you goals. I like them. And I think Joey Barton is the kind of manager that will use the experience of missing out last season in the playoffs and use it as a real positive to that group of players. Fleetwood, for me, I think they'll win the league.
You think they'll win the league?
Yeah, I think they'll win the league. I think they're that strong. I think on paper, they look great, Fleetwood. They look in very good shape. They'd be my tip to win it.
And in League Two, actually, do you know what? I'll pick out Harrogate against Walsall. Again, talking of ground sharing, Harrogate into the league, two promotions in three seasons. It's been a meteoric rise for them, Paul.
Oh, talk about riding the crest of a wave as well. What a way to start. 4-0 winners at Southend last weekend. But you talk about the journey. Simon Weaver arrived in 2009 to find an overgrown pitch, didn't have any players, and he had a budget of £1,600. And to see Harrogate in the Football League, I'm delighted. I hope I get to go there, because Harrogate is a beautiful place to visit. What a lovely area. So I can't wait to go there, but really chuffed to see teams like this doing well. Who's to say where this journey will stop for Harrogate Town? But baby steps. Got to be baby steps.
Paul, loved your company. Do you want to get any more gratuitous Sheffield United references in? Or have you?
No, I'll leave it there. I think I've done enough. Thank you very much for now.
I think you have. Great to talk to you. Sadly, we are once again out of time. Huge thanks to our guests this week, Paul Walker, Dan Gage and Harry Kuehl. If you've liked what you heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share the podcast on your socials. A reminder, if you want to get in touch, our email address is efl@thepodcastworks.com. That's efl@thepodcastworks.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you again next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.